Call from mom. Answer it. Call silenced.
Instacart knows nothing gets between you and the game. That's why they make ordering from your couch easy. Stock up today and get all your groceries for the week delivered in as fast as 30 minutes without missing a minute of the game.
You have 47 new voicemails.
Download the app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
What is going on in the NBA? Mark Childress in for Mark Sturgis today. The world's most decent sports producer, Diesel, right here with me. But let's get to this first. Here's your chance at some free money. It's the $1,000 free cash stash on ESPN Upstate. The keyword for this hour is PET, P-E-T. Text that keyword to 72881. That's 72881. Good luck to you. The $1,000 free cash stash on ESPN Upstate. Now up to 12 times per weekday, beginning at 7 a.m. You know, a lot of people, you know, they put it down a gear on Friday. Hey, it's coming. I'm going to take it a little easy. We're actually going the other direction. We're going up a gear. We got some great guests today on the show. We've got David Hale from ESPN joining us in the next segment. Going to talk all things ACC with him. David is one of my top five favorite Twitter followers to follow, I guess I should say, out there. Hilarious. Can't wait to have him. The always entertaining Ryan McGee is going to be joining us at 5:20. He's out in Indianapolis for the Indy 500. Kevin McGuire from NBC Sports, one of the smartest guys around about college football. I've been trying to get Kevin on for weeks. We just haven't had the schedule work out until today. He'll be on at 5:37. And then if you want to catch up on all things Clemson, it's 6:05. Lawton Swan from Clemson Sports Talk. We got a full show today. Really excited about that. So, Diesel, I have a question for you, sir. Where was I 16 years ago today? Why is that significant for me?
You were thumbing through the big book of baby names.
I was.
That's what you were doing.
You're correct. My son Faxon turned 16 years old today. Happy birthday, Faxon. And there is one thing that is somewhat interesting, Diesel. So my wife went through a ridiculously long and difficult labor. Thank you, Carrie Beth. And our goal the whole day was for Faxon to be born on May the 24th. We literally get to the birth of the baby. Cut the umbilical cord, all of that. I look up at the clock with the doctor, and I'm like, Doc, we made it. It's May 24th. He's like, I've never seen this before. Stroke of midnight, May 25th. Literally, born at May 25th and 0 seconds. So that's kind of interesting. So every year at midnight, like last night, go down, happy birthday, Faxon. So special day for me, man. Excited. Diesel, I'm trying to talk Faxon into getting here and doing an NBA segment with me. I watch the games with him in the evenings. He knows more about the NBA than some of the pundits, I think, that I hear on ESPN and Fox Sports. So far, he's turned me down. If you change your mind, Faxon, come on in, man. I got some time in the 6 o'clock hour. We'll talk some NBA. So, speaking of the NBA, Diesel, it sounds like you watched the game last night, too. Some of it?
No. Well, I caught a little bit of it on SportsCenter.
The replays or the highlights.
Right.
Yeah. It was, so for me, it is pretty rare that I will turn off a game in the middle or walk away. But I actually had to for a couple minutes last night. Probably about 3 minutes into the fourth quarter, I don't know why, and maybe the Rockets are infecting my brain like they're infecting the Golden State Warriors' brain. But I counted 7 consecutive possessions to start the fourth quarter. And it was the exact same thing for Houston. James Harden was sitting on the bench. Chris Paul would dribble slowly up the court, kind of into the upper right-hand corner. And the Rockets would run a couple of screens until they got the switch that Chris Paul wanted. And then Chris Paul would actually back up almost to the midcourt line, slowly dribble up to the three-point line, and then he would make his decision, right? He'd pull up and shoot a three. He'd drive by him, try for a layup. I think they went 7 straight possessions where he was literally the only person that touched the ball. Just pure isolation basketball, which to me couldn't have possibly been more boring. Now, I'm not being negative about Chris Paul. He's a great player. James Harden's a great player. But for my money, ISO, again and again and again is maddening. And I had to like walk away from the TV for a little bit because it was just driving me crazy. And the thing that worries me the most, you're going to say something?
Yeah, what do they tell you to do in football? Do it until they stop it. If it's successful, keep doing it until they stop it, and they couldn't stop it.
Hey, more power to the Rockets. It's working. And in fact, it's working in more ways than one. The Golden State Warriors are now becoming an ISO team. So the Warriors got some stats today, averaged about 7 isolation plays a game coming into this series. That includes the during the season and the first two rounds of the playoffs, very consistently at 7. They're at 21 isolation plays themselves. So the Rockets are getting in, they're a worm getting into the Warriors' brain, and they're turning them into an isolation team. And also did some digging on how many isolation plays the Rockets ran last night, and it was 11 billion. And I might be underestimating. For my money, it's crazy. And this is a problem for a couple of reasons. So, hey, if you're a Rockets fan and you like the ISO basketball, give me a call. 844-GSP-ESPN. That's 844-477-3776. It's crazy to me. And I'm worried for a couple of reasons. One, the NBA and the NFL, they're both copycat leagues. What is the flavor of the month? Who did something new in the NFL this year that worked? Who did something new in the NBA this year that worked? Now we're going to change our team to do more of that. What's the flavor of the month right now in the NFL? It's the run-pass option. You didn't even hear RPO probably until this season in the NFL. Now you heard it in college, but you didn't see it much in the NFL. Then somebody named Carson Wentz comes along, followed by, oh, I don't know, someone named Deshaun Watson. Guess who's coming this year? Baker Mayfield. You're going to hear it more, you're going to see it more, and it's working. And other NFL teams are going to put some of that in their offenses. It's a copycat league.
Are we seeing the NFL change in a big way? I mean, how often have we heard over the last 5 years at least? Going back, it goes back farther than that, but over the last 5 years, we've heard, you know, we hear about the prototypical body. We want that big body quarterback, mm-hmm. the statue in the pocket. It's changing, man.
I think so, too.
And, you see great college players devalued because they're not that. They are not this big statuesque kind of quarterback.
And Sean Watson was devalued because
right.
he didn't
have
the size.
Those kinds of quarterbacks, it's true. Those big guys will have more longevity in this league because they can take the punishment. The little guys, they may be in and out of the league in 4 or 5 years.
Yep.
You know, they're not going to have these 20-year careers that some of these big players have.
I think it's here to stay, too, in that instance. But here's what I hope is not here to stay. ISO, basketball in the NBA. So the Rockets had the number one isolation player in the NBA coming into this season, meaning he ran more isolation plays than anyone else in the NBA, James Harden. So who did the Rockets acquire in the offseason? One of the top 5 players running isolation plays, Chris Paul. And now it's literally Harden or Paul every single possession doing the same thing over and over. So if they slay the beast, if they take down the Warriors, that's going to be looked at as the new blueprint. Oh, Want to advance further? We need to run more isolation plays. For the NBA, I think that would be a terrible thing. And for my money, I literally had to walk away. And again, I get what you're saying, Diesel. It's effective. Hats off to the Rockets. I mean, after they got blown out in game one at home, everyone was like, hey, this isolation play, this stuff doesn't work. The Rockets are like, yeah, it does. We just didn't have a very good night. And they doubled down. And last night, it feels like they quintupled down. Again and again, the same thing over and over and over. And the only other thing it makes me think of is Georgia Tech football and Paul Johnson. Man, it's ugly to watch, but if you do it right, it works. But can you imagine being a Georgia Tech football fan week in, week out? Think about the Georgia Tech spring game. You've got a formulaic offense running on both sides of the ball, which is not very much fun to watch. And to me, the Rockets are not very much fun to watch. And this isn't for my entertainment, but this is an entertainment venue, the NBA is. And man, they're doing so many things right now. I compliment Adam Silver on a ton of stuff. NBA ratings, haven't seen the ratings yet for this round, and the games have been terrible, but up till now, the ratings have been up. A lot of other sports ratings are going down right now. NBA is trending in the right direction. But man, If the Rockets find a way to do this, and ISO ball becomes the new flavor of the month, that's going to drive me crazy. One piece of news, and it's bad news. Rocket star Chris Paul's status for Game 6 of the Western Conference Finals is not in question. He is out. He is out for Game 6 due to an injured hamstring. And they're being not very specific about it at all. Now, look, the Rockets are, I believe the last I saw, 12-point underdogs on the road against the Warriors, and that's without Chris Paul. They'd probably be 6 or 8 point underdogs to the Warriors on the road, even with them. So I think what the Rockets are saying is, it's one of two things. One, Chris Paul is out, and you're not going to see him in Game 7 either, and if that's the case, the Rockets are in big, big trouble. Or, hey, we don't want to push it. We know we've got two more chances at these guys. Why don't we rest up Chris Paul for Game 6, which is to be tomorrow, and have him ready for Game 7 at home in Houston if the Warriors are to win tomorrow night. So really bad news. Man, I hate it. And sports, period. I mean, the Warriors are down Andre Iguodala right now. Hey, the Celtics are down their two best players. They're playing the Cavs. They have two all-stars. Gordon Hayward, Kyrie Irving, out and injured. So this is now three of the four teams left have a major player out. Now, Andre Iguodala is not a star for the Warriors by any means, but he's a starter, and he's been an all-star multiple times in his career. He doesn't have the impact of a Chris Paul. That would be devastating for the Rockets. So now, I guess in Game 6, Harden's going to double down on the ISO, I guess. I mean, Chris Paul probably ran 25 of them last night, so Harden may run 100 of them tomorrow night. So it'd be interesting to see how the Rockets pivot. It really feels like that's headed to Game 7, and what a Game 7 that would be. Warriors just don't seem like they can get out of their own way right now. Rockets doing just enough to squeak out two ugly wins in a row. We'll figure it out. We'll talk a little more NBA later on in the show. But first things first, we got David Hale coming in from ESPN. We're going to talk about the Clemson depth chart. He's all over the ACC Atlantic and Coastal coming into the new season. And I got a question for him as well that I think you'll like. The beat goes on for Clemson baseball. Mark Childress in for Mark Sturgis here on a Friday. The world's most decent sports producer, Diesel, right here with me as well. Hoping to get David Hale from ESPN on with us here in just a minute or two. But another great day for Clemson yesterday. Clemson scored 6 runs in the 6th inning to defeat a red-hot Miami team 7-1. That puts Clemson into the semifinals of the ACC baseball tournament, which will take place tomorrow. Miami had won 11 games in a row before the Tigers took them down, and it was another big inning. Man, once they get those bats going right now, makes a big difference for the Tigers. Clemson improves to 45-13 in the season. I think that that win gets Clemson locked in as a national top 8 seed, which will give them both a regional and a super regional hosting opportunity if they can advance in the tournament. So we'll see what happens there. Here's what head coach Monty Lee had to say. We played a very, very complete baseball game tonight. It was a pitcher's duel for a good portion of the game for 5 innings. I thought that the pitchers went toe-to-toe and executed pitches, both defense making plays. You know, we just found a way to do the little things early, and then in the 6th inning, that momentum, once the momentum starts and our offense is so contagious, it's very, very difficult to stop it. So Clemson will play the winner of NC State and Florida State. That game will happen tomorrow. And Pitt and Louisville will be the other game that's a little bit earlier in the afternoon tomorrow in the ACC tournament. But right now, we've got David Hale from ESPN. David, thanks so much for joining us. You've been on a statistical run on Twitter this week. Is that off-season boredom and waiting for football, or are you on a specific assignment right now?
No, I needed something to do. I was bored.
Well, you've had some real good stuff there. Did you take a look at the Clemson depth chart this week when it came out? I didn't know if anything had jumped out at you. Of course, we've been talking all week about Kelly Bryant named over Trevor Lawrence as the starting QB. Travis Etienne got my attention a little bit in the running back spot. Anything jump out at you when you were taking a peek at that earlier this week for Clemson?
Yeah, you know, look, I don't think there's anything on there that's untrue, but I think a little bit of that too is a little bit of the depth chart is designed to kind of get guys' attention. Yeah, you know, to your point, I was certainly a little bit surprised to see that Travis Etienne was the clear and away starter. That was certainly not the case really for most of last year. You know, there's the secondary, I think, was a question mark for a lot of people and maybe still is based on, you know, how that depth chart looks there. The Kelly Bryant stuff is not a huge surprise. It's pretty much what Dabo said at the end of spring practice. But for me, the takeaway at quarterback is not so much the way it shapes up on the depth chart today as it is sort of the reading between the lines of how people have talked about it. And, you know, at the beginning of spring, there was a pretty clear delineation between one and two. And as you started talking to Dabo more and more throughout spring practice, it certainly seemed like the trajectory was that Trevor Lawrence was certainly on his way up and had proven that he belonged in that conversation. And Kelly Bryant, of course, did not have a very great, certainly spring game anyway. But, you know, the other thing that I have trouble shaking is that last year after the spring game, I didn't come away saying that Kelly Bryant was going to be clearly the guy either. But when he came back for fall camp, he really seemed like a different guy with a new amount of confidence, with a new amount of determination to kind of win and secure that job. And so, you know, I hesitate to put too much into what one spring means, but the conversation around Trevor Lawrence is such that if we don't see him atop the depth chart week one, it's still hard for me to believe he's not going to be out there and playing routinely at some point during this season.
Chatting with David Hale from ESPN. David, I think what still gets lost in the shuffle around here, at least, I mean, we get a lot of calls, and it's all about the offensive side of the football. Clemson's defensive line and defense in general, it's going to be one of the better ones that we've seen in the ACC in the last few years, and there's been some good defenses in the ACC, but, man, up front is going to be a nightmare for teams this year.
Yeah, I mean, look, it's as good as any team in the country. I think it certainly ranks up there with some of those elite Alabama defensive fronts that we've seen over the years. And more than that, it's a veteran group. I mean, these guys have not only all played, but have all played together. And certainly even when you kind of take a step back and start looking at the linebacking core, those guys, it's the same way. So look, this is a unit that is going to be insanely good. I think the expectations certainly are that that's the case, and those are reasonable expectations. You know, I think the only question is, do they meet expectations? And it's hard for me to think that Cleveland Farrell and Christian Wilkins decided to come back for a senior season when they're not going to follow through on that. I just, to me, the motivation is there. So look, if I'm any other offense in the ACC, I am pretty much terrified of what I'm going to be going up against in that group this year.
David Hale from ESPN. David, you just talked about any other offense in the ACC. And when we talk about the ACC at the top, you know, it's hard to not talk about Clemson. But if not Clemson, then who? Who is set up to be the best team this year, who has a real legitimate shot? You know, it takes results, and it takes a whole lot of luck, and it takes a whole lot of good scheduling that, you know, these guys are putting together 5, 6, 10 years in advance. Who has the right mixture, if things go well, if not Clemson, to make it into the playoff?
Well, I mean, certainly people are going to talk about Miami because they won the Coastal last year. But to me, I don't view this Miami team certainly as drastically better than last year's team. And, you know, while I think that was a good team last year, we saw in the ACC championship game that it was not a team that was ready to compete with Clemson. The rest of the Coastal, to me, is a little bit of a crapshoot. I see some upside with Virginia Tech, with Pittsburgh. But as you said, there's tons of things to worry about. Two that have to come together, whether it's, you know, look at Pittsburgh, and I say that's a team that might be able to put something together, but their schedule is bad for them. I mean, it does not set up particularly well for them to make a big run. Virginia Tech maybe has the schedule, particularly if they can pull off an upset against Florida State in week one, but they've just got so many ifs across the board, particularly on the offensive side of the ball, those big question marks that they're going to need a lot to go right. You know, Georgia Tech's a team that you certainly see some upside. You could watch them last year and see the upside, but they still finished with 5 wins. So I don't know if I'm sold on them by any stretch of the imagination. You know, if you're forced to choose, the team that I'm going to say is the team that I think sort of always is the default, which is Florida State. And I realize this is a team that really disappointed last year, but there are a lot of reasons that they disappointed last year, from a brutal schedule to the quarterback situation to the coaching situation. But I also think the more you dig into Florida State, there was a lot more to like than maybe what showed up in the final standings last year. They're going to have some quarterback depth this year. I mean, even if they go to James Blackman again, that will be a decision that was made because he won the job and is the best guy on the field. And I think that that's certainly a reasonable thing to have happen. They're going to have as good a combination of running backs as there are in the league. They've got a defense that I think was drastically underrated last year in a lot of respects. Now, they lost a couple of guys that I think are really good, certainly Derwin James, but they've got a lot of really good guys back. That's, you know, for whatever you want to say about Jimbo Fisher, he didn't leave the cupboard empty. There was a lot of good recruiting classes that came through there. So I think, you know, a lot of the question there is how quickly does everyone adjust to the Willie Taggart scheme, both offensively and on defense. But I think that it's certainly, look, I don't think Florida State was in any way a 6-6 team last year. It was just sort of a confluence of events that led to that. So I don't think the leap for Florida State to get back into Clemson territory is as big as a lot of people think. Now, that said, Clemson, to me, is still markedly ahead of Florida State, but I could see that gap closing. And if you're saying, all right, Clemson's not going to win the ACC, who's it going to be? My money would still be on Florida State.
Talking with David Hale from ESPN. David, I was chatting ACC baseball a little bit before you came on. Are you a fan of this pool play that they're using in the ACC, which is different than they're doing in a lot of other places around the country? What I'm hearing is fans of the ACC hate it, but I've talked to some folks from the SEC and some other conferences this week, and they wish their conferences would adopt it. So curious where you fall on the way they structure that tournament.
Yeah, you know, I mean, you don't have to spend more than about 5 minutes on Twitter during this tournament to know that ACC fans hate it. I think it's certainly a question of, like, you know, at the end of the day, success or failure is based on, you know, how many national seeds you're going to get, how many teams you still have playing when we get to regionals and into super regionals, and what did you do? Did this help your conference or did it hurt your conference? I think that's still up in the air. But, you know, look, new is always a little bit of a transition for fans, particularly when it comes to college sports, and they tend to be traditionalists. I'm open to it. I don't necessarily think it's as horrible as a lot of the Twitter reaction has been. But, you know, again, at the end of the day, the success or failure of it is going to be judged by whether or not, you know, you see a team like Clemson miss out on a national seed, or whether you see some of these other sort of fringe teams end up not playing into the regionals at all.
Yeah, it'll be interesting. You know, today it's set up like this: North Carolina and Georgia Tech playing right now. That game means nothing. Both of those teams are done, at least with their ACC tournament, while we wait on the Florida State-NC State game later today, and the winner of that gets to advance to play Clemson. So it's kind of a strange situation each day. Love it or hate it, we can figure it out. Well, wrapping up with David Hale from ESPN, at David Hale ESPN on Twitter. Go follow him there. David, our question of the day today is this. What is the worst game that you have ever attended? And it can be that you were a fan of a team that just got blown out. It can be you just had a personal trauma at the event or whatever. I'm just curious. We've been asking the folks that we've been talking to today. Where does that land for you?
I can pretty easily answer this. I've got a stock answer. If I think about it as a fan, I'm sure there are some games that are more of a gut punch for me. But the worst experience I've ever had at a game was the ACC championship game in Jacksonville, Wake Forest 9, Georgia Tech 6, in the rain. I hadn't gotten my parking pass for the event in advance. I had to, like, double park and literally walk pretty much in the rain around the stadium. I can't stand the city of Jacksonville anyway. Hopefully you don't have too many Jacksonville listeners that are going to hold this against me. And then, of course, a 9-6 final in the rain, one of the most ugly performances by two teams that you're going to see. I remember afterwards, I was working for a paper in Georgia at the time, so I was, of course, covering it from a Georgia Tech angle, and Reggie Ball refused to talk to the media, and the whole thing was just an absolute nightmare. And the worst part of it all, this is sports writer problems for you, they give you a little gift when you check in for these big games like this, the bowl gifts and what have you. And so I checked in to get my credential, and they give you a little box, and it has a gift inside. But I was running so late that I never opened the box. And when I came back up doing interviews in the locker room, somebody had stolen my box. Which I don't care. I don't need a gift. But I have no clue what was in the box to this day. I have no idea what was inside the box. So if you know anybody who covered that ACC championship game and remembers what the media gift was, I would certainly be all ears, because it's one of those nagging questions that I will have for the rest of my life.
Cue Brad Pitt from the movie Seven.
That's
what's
exactly
in the box?
What I was thinking. Yeah, what's in the box? Yeah. So that's good. Well, David, sorry to end on a bad note, but hey, the worst game you've ever attended. I think that's a good story to get us started here today. Thank you for that.
My pleasure. I've made my peace with it, so.
Awesome. That's all that matters, man. That was David Hale from ESPN. Always fun to talk to him at David Hale ESPN. One of the most favorite people that I follow on Twitter. So, hey, we're going to open the phone lines coming up after this break. 844-477-3776. What's the worst game you've ever attended? Can you top David Hale's story? What's the worst game you've ever attended in person? Mark Childressen for Mark Sturgis, here with the world's most decent sports producer, Diesel, as well. Diesel, I'll offer it up to you, my man. What is the worst game that you have ever attended? It doesn't have to be results-oriented. We just heard David Hale from ESPN lamenting a horrible experience in the press box in an ACC championship game for football. What is yours?
I was at that Clemson-Notre Dame game in the tsunami.
Yes.
The hurricane game, I think it was 2 years ago, 3 years mm-hmm. ago, whatever that was.
Yep.
Phenomenal game. I mean, as a football game, it was an incredible game. It was back and forth. Clemson had the big lead. Notre Dame came back in a big way late in the fourth quarter. You know, incredible stand there at the end to preserve the game. It was a great game.
Yes.
But it was miserable to sit out there and watch that game because it was raining the entire time. It never stopped. It doesn't matter how good your rain gear is, it's getting in. Mm-hmm. That rain is getting in. Unless you're wearing, you know, a big giant condom, it's getting in. You know, there's no way you're staying dry at a game like that.
Yep.
And I'm going to tell you something gross, okay?
Oh, boy.
So my only requirement to get into that game, it was Sturgis' family had tickets, and there was a couple of people who weren't able to go. And he said, I'll give you one of these tickets if after the game you will walk back to the media lot, get the car, and meet us at the student center where they were doing their postgame show.
Right.
And I remember just being completely waterlogged down to the bone, just completely mm-hmm. soaking wet. Made it over there. I had done the smart thing. I brought a change of clothes. And as I was taking my socks off, you know that big chunk of callus that always grows on the corner of your toe.
Come on.
The whole thing just slid right off like it was a hot knife through butter. And it was, I mean, it's disgusting. I know.
Yes,
but afterwards, I'm like, that's a fresh, clean toe. I mean, there's no callus on it whatsoever.
So you saw the bright side.
Yeah.
Even in a bad day.
Yeah. Two bright sides. A great game. You know, people pay a lot of money for that kind of treatment on their feet.
Yeah.
And I just, you know, got wet.
I thought this was a worst story, and now you're turning it into a happy ending. Yeah, I was at that game, and we are fortunate enough to have a spot that is very close to the stadium, unless your lot is closed because it's under a foot of mud, and then you park a mile and a half away and have to walk there in the rain afterwards.
That's why you get a Jeep that can go through that kind of stuff. Was it a closed lot, though?
It was a closed lot. Like, no one could get in. There were a couple right by the stadium, because remember that? I think that was either the second or third time where it had just monsooned during games. That whole season, it feels like every game was rain. So they had a couple of lots that were just, you're not getting in here. Doesn't matter. Now, you could have gotten out of there with a Jeep, probably, but it still might have been dicey because it was so bad. But mine is definitely 2003, and if you want to get in on this, 844-477-3776, what's the worst game you've ever attended? I'd like to hear about it. Mine was, and I bet there'll be a few other people listening, Georgia and Clemson in 2003. Beginning of the season, hot as the surface of the sun. I think that was on like an August 28th or 29th. It was a very early start to the season. Clemson was hoping to come out of the box strong, play in a Georgia team, I believe, that was ranked number 9. Final score was Georgia 30, Clemson 0. That one hurts, and it hurts even more when you've lived in Atlanta and talked smack about how good Clemson was going to be all summer, and you get to hear from all your Georgia fans about how poorly that one went. That was probably my worst experience of the game as well. But, hey, if you want to talk about it, 844-477-3776. I saw something on Twitter about this earlier today. I just thought it was a funny thing to tee up out there because everybody's got their experiences, right? About your team just getting smashed. Maybe you had all kinds of issues like Diesel. Although Diesel turned his into a happy story. Wasn't really following the right way down the line there. But what is your worst game ever attended? That's 844-477-3776. Going to bring Wes in here. Wes, what you got, man? What's your worst?
I can't remember the year. Maybe you can help me out on that. But it was at the old Atlanta Braves Stadium in Atlanta. It was the Peach Bowl between NC State and Iowa. Rained the whole time we were there, and it was cold. And it went into it. I think NC State finally won the game in the fourth quarter with like on the last play. It was like a 33-31 game.
Well, at least you saw a decent game, but yeah, sounds like the weather was terrible on that one. Wes, thanks a lot for the call, man. What is the worst game you've ever attended? 844-477-3776. We're going to go to Connor. Connor, what's yours, man? What's the worst one you've been at?
Man, I think it was the first time we played Texas A&M in Columbia, and my buddies and I went to the midnight yell that they did at our state house that night, and we were talking so much smack, and it was a lot of fun, and we went to the game, and all we could get were upper deck tickets. All the student tickets were out, so we got upper deck tickets, and it was like 140 degrees, and we were sitting in the upper level just getting blown out, and I just remember at halftime, we were like, you know what, it's not worth it anymore, let's go, and it was awful because it was so hot and it was so bad.
Thanks a lot, Connor. I'm getting a theme here that that weather has a lot to do with your experience at a ball game. So, hey, what's the worst game you've ever attended? 844-477-3776. We've had some good ones here. Hey, Griffin, what you got, man? What's the worst one you've been to?
Worst game I've been to? I'm a Celtic fan living in South Carolina, and my chance to go see the Big Three was in Charlotte back when they were the Bobcats. And we sat in the upper deck, and the whole Big Three was still with the team. And they sat the whole Big Three. I don't even think Paul Pierce or KG made the trip. So that was a big disappointment. The worst game I've ever been to.
Oh, man, I bet you paid through the nose for those tickets too. Griffin, thanks a lot. What's the worst game you've ever attended? 844-477-3776. That's the first non-weather related one for any of them. But, yeah, man, in the NBA, you can get hosed. I went to a Cavs-Hawks game a few years ago. It's tickets that my company had. They were really good. It was over the Christmas holidays. It was one of those things like 3 days before Christmas where the admin comes out and says, hey, we've got tickets to the Hawks and the Cavs over Christmas. I'm like, yeah, I'll take those. All excited to go down there with my son. No LeBron James. Last-minute scratch. Rumors are he was out partying the night before because it was his birthday. But I feel your pain there. Definitely so. So, hey, what is the worst game you've ever attended? 844-477-3776. Kevin, what you got, man? What's the worst one you've been at?
The worst game I've ever been to, when I was in high school, I was dating a girl whose little brother played in a Little League basketball game, and the final score of the game was like 9-4. It was excruciating just sitting there and watching just – there was more rebounds than points scored.
So now, did the girlfriend later become your wife? Is there a happy ending to the story, or did that break up too?
No, that blew up.
Oh, man, you might be our clubhouse leader, man. Kevin, thanks a lot. What's the worst game that you have ever attended? Let's go to Ben on the line. Ben, what you got, man?
All right, I got two real quick ones. The first one was a Cavs game in the 90s. Now, let me tell you, the starting lineup, I believe, include Brevin Knight, Sean Kemp, Bobby Surra, and a handful of other weirdos that nobody has ever heard of ever again. And The other one, this one might take the cake. Browns, Bills, 2007. The blizzard. I believe the final score was 9-5. I think maybe 6 complete passes that entire game.
Oh my gosh.
Awful.
Yeah.
Awful.
That one may take the cake so far. Again, we got the weather going again there, Ben. What is the worst game you've ever attended? This is a fun one, this segment. I'm glad we're talking about this. 844-477-3776. Let's go to Chris on the phones. Chris, what you got, man? What's the worst one you've been to?
Man, I went to a Clemson Carolina game at Williams-Brice, and I was fresh out of the military. My cousin was a big coach, and he told me, he said, "Hey," he says, "how'd you like to go to the Clemson Carolina game and stand on the sidelines?" I was like, "Man," I said, I'm a Clemson fan. That's awesome." So I decided to do that. Everything was sketchy. I mean, it was just sketchy from the get-go. We parked down near the entrance, and Odyssey 2001 started playing, and we walked in, and everything was going great. And he said, "Oh, by the way, you're a future kicker for South Carolina." Gave me a name and said they may want you to, you know, to do something at halftime.
So you were like a fake recruit.
Oh, I mean, absolutely. And here I am, I'm 24 years old and I'm like sweating bullets. I'm like, my God, I'd been to Iraq and I was like, well, you know, this, I'm more stressed about this than I was anything that I was in over there. And I was like, dude, man, you can't do this. You can't just ask me to be a place kicker for, you know. But so that was my worst game. And any time he's ever asked me to do anything related to sports, I absolutely deny.
Oh, yeah, you pass on it now. That's great, Chris. Another great one. What's last chance to get in if you want, 844-477-3776, and we're going to close it out. What is the worst game you've ever attended? We've had some painful ones on here, some really strange ones as well, and a lot of stuff that's weather-oriented also, which is no surprise, man, especially when you get surprised, right? Man, there have been some football games that have been so hot, and Clemson over the years has had some extremely rainy games. And so have them as well. So, hey, let's do this. We're going to get out to break. You can stay on the phones. We'll carry this over until the next segment. What is the worst game that you have ever attended? We'll keep talking about it coming up. What is the worst game you've ever attended? We've been having some fun with this one today. 844-477-3776 is the number. Mark Childerson for Mark Sturgis. Diesel's here with me as well. We're going to go back to the phones. We've got Ryan on board. Ryan, what's the worst game you've ever been to, bud?
I used to umpire baseball in one season, a game in March. The game time temperature was 34 degrees to start. In the second inning, it started sleeting. And the game went 13 innings through sleet.
Of course, that one goes into extra innings.
Yeah, it would go into extra innings. The final score was a great game. It was 1-0, but wow. It was sleet against your face with wind at 33 degrees is not fun.
No, not at all, man. Ryan, man, a trooper to go through that one as an umpire. Again, I'm getting surprised a couple times today. We've got people coming in as umps. We had David Hale talking about his bad experience in the press box and all kinds of different angles on this. Again, if you want to get in, 844-477-3776. Let's go to Jim, see what his story is. Jim, what you got, man? What's the worst game you've ever been to?
Mark, an old friend calling in here. It is a Furman Stephen F. Austin playoff game back around 1990. The game started off with some snow flurries, ended up with 4 inches of snow. Furman had a barefooted kicker, missed an extra point during the snowstorm and had to go for two with 20 seconds to go. They had had three of their quarterbacks injured, and so their fourth string guy was a cornerback, and they knew he was going to be handing off, and they stopped him on the one-inch line, and the game was over.
Oh, good grief. Yeah, another weather-related one, Jim. Thanks so much for the call and snow. We've had, I think, every type of precipitation now. We've had a bunch of rain ones, had a couple of sleets, and a snow. This has been a great topic. What's the worst game you've ever attended? We've got time probably for two more callers, 844-477-3776. Let's go to Cornell. All right, Cornell, what you got, man? We've had some good stories today, so bring a good one here.
I was dating this girl back in high school, and she was – her little brother was bragging about, oh, how he was going to be a big star at the Little League team. They was playing for the Taylor Falcons at the time. Her little brother was the running back, and her nephew was the quarterback. First play of the game, her brother gets hit, goes down, starts crying, saying he got hit too hard. Second play of the game, the nephew gets hit. Now, they both on the sideline crying because they said they got hit too hard, and I'm over there laughing. And she's telling me I'm being insensitive to laughing at what was going on.
Cornell, that's a great – so, again, did it end well with the girl? Is that girl your wife today? Happy ending of the story? Or did this go in the wrong direction as well?
Yeah, a couple of days later, she said she didn't want to see me anymore.
Oh, man. Cornell, that's another good one. Hey, I think we got time for one last caller here. Let's go to the phones. I think I know who this is. Is this McCain? McCain, what's your worst game story?
When I was at my brother's baseball game and they hit a baseball and I got hit in the ankle with the baseball.
So it was a pop fly, like a foul ball, and it hit you right in the ankle?
Yes.
Unbelievable. You should have had a good dad to protect you a little bit better.
Is this a plant, Mark Childress?
This is not a plant. She decided to call me on her own. So this is my daughter, McCain, and I remember it well.
Bye.
It was a foul ball into the stands. Bye, sweetie. It's a foul ball into the stands, and I think I made an effort for it. It was one of those things, I guess, I just wasn't doing a good job of thinking about too well, and I still hear about this all the time. So the foul ball comes right down and hits her right on the ankle. Of course, it like swells up and leaves this big mark, and I feel like a terrible dad. Thanks, McCain. Now I feel bad.
It was funny, Jim calling in to talk about playoff games. You know, we loved going to playoff games in the snow and sleet. That was a competitive advantage up at App State.
Yeah, no doubt. But in that day, when you've got a barefooted kicker, having a lot of snow is not a very helpful thing. So, man, what a fun topic. That was a lot of fun the last half hour or so about the worst game you've ever attended. Hey, still plenty of more great stuff to talk about. Going to catch you up on college baseball. And we got some great guests coming up in the next hour.
T-Mobile has invested billions to light up America's largest 5G network from big cities to small towns, including right here in yours. And great coverage is just the beginning. Right now, families and small businesses can save up to 20% versus AT&T and Verizon when they switch. Visit your local T-Mobile store today.
Plan savings with 3 lines of T-Mobile Essentials versus comparable available plans. Plan features and taxes and fees may vary.